Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Karate Podcast. This is a midweek special, and I'm super excited to have back with me today, Jordan Thomas. Everyone knows who Jordan is. If you don't, you've been living in a cave all your life. Jordan is the 2016 WKF World Champion. He is the 2014 WKF European Champion. In January 2022, so just a year ago, he was selected to be part of GB Taekwondo. Only 11 people to be selected out of 300 hopefuls who would love to be involved in the Paris Olympics in 2024. Taekwondo, just on a note there, is currently the only Olympic and Paralympic striking martial art to offer a career pathway for athletes. And Jordan was one of the people, I'm not going to say lucky enough to be selected, because he's worked his backside off to get where he is, and we're going to get into that today. So Jordan, thanks so much for joining me. I know you are super busy, but a super busy year, so welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me. Good to have a
absolute
chat again.
Pleasure. So we're just catching up. So 2022 was a crazy year. Not only did you move over towards a Taekwondo career, but you also got married, and you've also had a beautiful baby girl called Olive. So yeah. Just like, can you just nutshell that experience, that whirlwind, you know, that was your life last year, and how it's been for you adjusting?
Yeah, it's been absolutely crazy. Obviously the biggest change is the baby. And you know, it's hard, it's challenging, but it's the most rewarding thing to date yet. It's like I actually love being a dad. And it just puts everything into perspective as well, which is great. But yeah, it was, you know, 2022, from a new career then into and then getting married, doing the preparations for that, and then preparations to having a little one too. I had it all going on.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, and apart from the fact you discover a whole new level of capacity for love that you didn't know was possible when you have a child. One of the impacts I've certainly felt, and I'm sure every dad or mum listening out there can empathize with, is the time impact that children can have. And more so, you're a professional athlete at the top of your sport. Like, we're talking Olympic level, not just talking, you know, European level or world level. How has that been in terms of managing your training and your day-to-day? How have you coped with that?
Well, at first it was really hard, coming into training tired and with no sleep, and then coming back still getting no sleep, so being more fatigued more than normal into a session, thinking I'm unfit, but actually I'm training every day, why am I feeling like this, you know, all them questions. But the great thing about being in the Olympic environment, you know, it's always changed for you and what works for you. So had a great team at Taekwondo, had a great coach, and we came up with a solution. So I would go in early, and I would do an individual session with my coach, maybe from 8 till 9, and then I'll join the group session and do a training session there. And then I would literally go at 12 o'clock. So my day would start at 8, and then I'd finish at 12. But then obviously if I needed to stay on an extra hour to do a meeting, or even, you know, sometimes I replace the individual session with an S&C session, or a physio session. Or if I do need to stay for a full day, I'd go in the athlete's room and I'd sleep in between the trainings, you know. So it is all, you know, you have a big team and you can make it work. And it, you know, it's you know, that's pretty much what an Olympic environment and a high, so should I say, a high performance environment brings to you.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You just got to make it work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's just skip back to January. So you've made selections for GB Taekwondo, which is a you know just a huge achievement. Can you tell us a little bit about that process and that experience for yourself?
Yeah, sure. That came about. That's quite funny, actually. After the Olympic qualification, I actually felt a bit lost. Obviously, not making the Olympics, being one of the fights that I took, getting hit in the last 2 seconds, and not being able to. Basically, so I've been practicing for this moment. It was meant to be a 4-year cycle, but it's a 5-year cycle if you include the pandemic. And that year out. So I literally had my eyes set on that Olympics for karate. And then after that, you know, yes, I was fine, but I was lost. I went from training 3 times a day in a full-time environment to training 3 times a week. And I found that very, very hard to cope with. And it's like, where do I go now? What do I do? And I had all these questions building up in my head. I'm like, you know, what do I do with myself? And then it came to, I think it was around, I want to say September time. And we was driving, I live in Manchester, so we was driving back to Luton to go and see some family. And my wife goes, "Do you think you can do taekwondo?" And obviously, me being me, I'm like, "Yeah, of course I could do taekwondo." And she went, "Good, because I've signed you up for a trial, and you're fighting next weekend." Like,
Amazing. What a wife.
and I'm like, "What?" Because I think she just had enough of me moping about, to be fair, right? I was like, "Yeah, okay, next weekend." I didn't have a lot of time to prepare. So anyways, I got invited down to GB trials, GB Taekwondo trials. You go into the center and they have a few phases, and a few time slots. So I think there must have been about 20 of us on this time slot. So we go in, they sit you down, they give you a presentation about where they want GB, where basically the history of GB Taekwondo. Where they want to go and who they are looking for and what they are looking for. So they actually break it down for you before you go and fight and whatever. They describe this is who we are, this is what we are, and this is where we want to go. And this is what we, you know, who we're looking for. So we're all like 20 of us there, and then we go into the dojo, the kick hall. Where it's all curtained off, so you can't actually see the center ring. They have the refs there, and they have like, I call it the panel, the judges panel. So they have obviously the performance director and the coaches looking on as well. Obviously they're picking and they're deciding who they want to go on. And then yeah, they put me up against who I found out was a kickboxing world champion. It must have been for their own. So it was a karate world champ versus their kickboxing world champ. And yeah, so I came up against that. I've done very well against that one. And yeah, I kind of dominated most of the fight. But he was a very, I got caught by a few spinning hook kicks and stuff like that on the way, but it's continuous, right? So you just keep fighting and battle on, right? So yeah, I got through that. The coaches obviously liked what they saw, and they invited me to a 3-day camp. That was to join the other GB members, but also I think there must have been, again, there must have been about 15, 20 people out of all the people they've trialed. You say, I think that was 300 people they had all together in that
That's right.
process. And they had about 20 people, 20 boys that got to join the GB team to trial for 3 days, and you just join in a training, but also they make you fight. And I've done really well. You know, I come back, you know, these, the people who, I was probably the only one who transitioned from a different sport as well at that, in that trial, who got invited back. So
Right,
I just,
amazing.
I didn't know, you know, I don't know, I've been around it because obviously when I was training it, I was training in a Taekwondo center, so I could see it all,
Sure.
but I've just been around it. So in my head, I'm thinking, you know what, whatever they're going to give me, I'm going to try it. If I mess up, I mess up. I don't care. You know, there were certain kicks that I've never seen before. And I'm like, right, I'll just give it a go.
Nice.
Yeah. And then they make you fight at the end. You know, I was doing very, very well in these fights against, you know, these Taekwondo fighters, winning some of the bouts as well. So then I received an email saying that I've been accepted.
Wow.
Coming to a meeting, yeah. And that's, you know, a lot of people thought I was, because I was given the sport. No, actually, I went and trialed and I worked for it, and
Yeah,
I was
absolutely.
invited. So that was nice. So I got invited by the performance director, and then they announced who my coach was. I had a brilliant coach. He also converted from karate in the, I think, late 80s, early 90s. He's from Cuba, right?
Right.
So he understood where I'm coming from.
Yeah, yeah,
So,
yeah. That's fantastic. That's incredible. So I think, yeah, you're probably right. A lot of people out there think, oh, John Thomas, world champion in karate. Of course they'd want him on the Taekwondo squad, but you did the full process of selection, 300 people down to 20, down to 11, I think they got finally taken on. And we were talking, you weren't the youngest person there, eh?
I was the oldest one. I know. I think the average age was like 20, 21 years old. And I think I think the person under me was 24. He was taken on. So yeah, I'm
Wow.
30 years. I was 29 at the time, but coming on to 30 years old.
Yeah.
So I was the oldest that they taken on, but they saw potential in me, especially my coach that I was working with. He was brilliant, you know, and my first few fights as well. I remember going out and I fought a Swiss international, and you know, I lost it like literally just like that. And I train well, I fight well, I bring something to the team, as an experienced athlete as well. So yeah, there was a lot that I brought to the table. And do you know what? I train 3 times a day again. You know, I'm back full time, and I got to be a part of Paris 2024 Olympic cycle, which was nice as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And what have you found have been so I don't know much about Taekwondo, I've done it before. Growing up as a kid, you know, there's Taekwondo clubs next to the karate clubs. You went there for a bit more sparring and stuff like that. But what is it like? What is the competitive scene like? How would it compare to, say, a K1 or Premier One style event? Is it in a similar ilk of setup, or is it just a totally different experience?
Yeah, I'd say it's quite similar. So I went to a G2, which is similar to like the Series A. And that's to gain ranking points in the international setup and the Open. So you still have like the best fighters coming in, trying to get their points for the Olympics. I'd say like the Grand Prix is like our Premier League. You know, that's the similarity. So me competing in there wasn't no different for me. Like, I didn't have a different feel. Like, for me, it was, yes, it was a new sport, but I've been doing this all my life. So I didn't have, you know, I've got a certain set of skills and I'm going to go and execute a job. That was my mentality. And, you know, I didn't feel out of place on that. And that's why I did perform. I perform well and how and learn quickly as well, because you know, I've been doing it for so long, and I'm a world champion at what I do.
So absolutely.
It's very similar. The only thing that's different is the technology system And if that goes down, then you could be on that mat waiting for 2 hours, an hour and a half on that mat of just that one fight. And then that then kind of delays the whole day. And so you could be there. You could be there from and fighting from 7 o'clock, but then you won't leave till 7 at night or 8 at night competing. And you know, in between your fights as well, you might have an hour or 2 hours between them fights as well. So it's completely different in that sense, where karate, you do one category and it's over in 2 hours or an hour and a half, and then you do the finals a couple of days later. But in taekwondo, you're, because it's three rounds and continuous, you have maybe 2 hours between each fight.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know, and you carry on from.
Yeah. And what's the energy requirement like for that? Was that a different experience for you in terms of how it taxed your body when you started to compete?
100%. It's totally different energy system. Totally different. I was by fastest. I was by far the fastest, or probably the most explosive in that gym. But what they had on me was if we were talking about training, I would burn out in an hour or 1 hour or 1 hour and 20 minutes, but they would train for 2 hours, but be able to train like that for the whole 2 hours because the energy system is different. It's like, I think how I compare it is karate is like this middle distance, like sprint. So like the 400, 8 meter, 800 meter, like sprint slash run, where taekwondo is more like 1,500 meters plus. That's the energy system. So that's where I'm burning out. So my direct shot was very effective and very good. But when you're doing three rounds continuous, and it's just all legs as well, so there's no like how the rules are as well, you can't move a lot as well. So there's no there's not much evasive movement on the perimeter. So it forces you to fight. What I'm trying to say is that the energy system's different. It did hit me and it did affect me. And it took me, it took me at least 6 months, 6 months to be able to fight and do three rounds in taekwondo to change that energy, or not even change the energy system, to find a way how I could fight effectively the way I want to fight in taekwondo.
Yeah. And what things in your training significantly had to change for that to happen? Was it just a length of time in your sparring, or was there different things you brought in to help you gain that edge?
Like I said, I had a very, very good coach. He's very tactically aware. And one thing was we knew if we put ourselves in certain situations, we could fight the way I wanted to fight, like that find that direct shot, and then double up on a leg and keep safe at the same time and not get hit. So that kind of mellowed the fight a lot as well, kept him long, or even create pressure without throwing sometimes. It's more like body language. It was implementing them tactics to do that, but I already had certain skills, so I didn't need, so I had to learn some new kicks and a new way of throwing, because it's a full contact sport as well, so we could follow through. It was obviously building the endurance in my legs to be able to kick constantly. So we had to do the conditioning sessions and train there as well, do a lot of technical sessions as well. So it was almost just repetition. And the great thing about being in that setup, they do a lot of individuals, so individual sessions with your coach, one-on-ones, so it's very, very personal. So you are able to adapt, you're able to change very quickly, because the focus is on you. It's not just a club session. It's not just a group session where it's a general session. You have to find it for yourself. Yes, you have to find it for yourself, but you also got that focus with your coach.
That's fantastic. So a couple of questions off that. Did you find it easy to turn the hands off when you switched over? That's the first question.
The answer is no. Because you're allowed to punch to the body, yeah? So my timing was very, very good to the body. And I probably was one of the best at doing that to the body and to close the distance. The distances are different in Taekwondo and Karate as well. So that was hard to adapt. But also, I accidentally punched people in the face a lot. And I had to apologize, whether it was in competition or whether it was in training. and also sweeping as well. So, you know, because you're not allowed to touch the legs, you're not allowed to sweep. So I would, you know, subconsciously just take the back leg, or when they're, you know, trying to look for that headshot, I'm seeing the opening for the sweep.
Yeah.
In training, I can get away with it and just say, oh, I'm sorry. Or when I'm getting frustrated and I'm seeing these kicks and getting hit with like all different directions, like, you know what? I'm just going to take his leg. Take the warning. that was hard to come out with. You know, karate's in my blood. It won't go anywhere. I've done it my whole life.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the second question around the training is obviously, as you said, you're throwing a huge amount of kicks, so that I guess the impact on the muscles and tendons in the body is going to have increased. Yeah. Have you had to alter your recovery process from your training sessions?
I definitely had to take it more seriously. So, you know, my legs and my back, I was just sore. I was just really, really sore, because it is a different type of training, and it's you know, it's all legs. You know, like at least in karate, you can come in and warm up with a couple of hands, a couple of kazamis, a couple of gakus. You know, you can before you even throw up a kick. Nah, and you're in taekwondo, you're literally legs. So I actually took very seriously. So each session, I turn up before everybody else, half an hour to 45 minutes before everybody else. And I took my warm up very, very seriously to get ready for that session. But I also cooled down and also had an ice bath.
Right.
Always ice bath, and took advantage of the physios as well, and the sports therapists there as well, to get a massage for my recovery. But also my nutrition as well had to be on point. And actually, being an older athlete as well, this is probably more important. You have to start taking care of your body a lot more. I also used to go on a run, a recovery run, whether it was at night or before training, before I even go to the center, just to get my body moving and just call it active recovery. So I don't stiffen up for the next day. So yeah, I did struggle. My body did struggle. These are the things that they were learning my coping. That's how I got through. I've been in a full-time setup before, and being an experienced and mature athlete, I knew I had to take care of my body. That's what I had to do.
Fantastic. And what's the sort of schedule like for you in terms of days per week training? And you mentioned you truck back training 3 times a day. Could you give us just a little bit of insight to your schedule?
Yeah. So, like I say, the training would be either at 8 o'clock or 9 a.m. And then that would be a two to two and a half, maybe sometimes 3 hour sessions. Wow. It's very intense. And then you have your break, whether it is you go to the sports therapist, physios, or you might have a meeting. In your meeting, you're going to have to eat your lunch as well, recover. And then you come back for your S&C. So you do your S&C, or before your S&C or after your S&C, you might have an individual session to, you know, focus, so you can do a focus session with your coach.
Yeah.
Whether it's tactics or whether it's conditioning, wherever you are in your program or whatever you need to work on, this is the session that you do it in. That's, you know, that's, and that's that kind of fast traction. You need them individual sessions. For me, that's how I learned and gathered my understanding for the sport. You know, it was the individual sessions. Like the group sessions were more, you've got your training partners. This is where what you've done in the individual, this is where you test it. you know, this is where you gather. I remember the first session I went in there, I had no clue what I did. I didn't know what the words mean. I didn't know half of the kicks. Even the way they throw psychic is different, you know, in certain, or there's like three ways to throw psychic, you know. But the individual session fast tracks you to that. And you know, you kind of find your feet, and you know, you either sink or swim, right?
It looks like you're swimming right now.
I'm not in the GB Taekwondo now. I've stopped that. Yeah.
Oh, did you?
I'll bring that one on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that. So that then leads me to the Paris Open. Just a few days ago, what a fantastic result for your, you know, comeback international tournament. Could you tell us about coming back to karate then?
Do you know what? It's funny because I don't think I ever left karate, because the coach that I had, he always used to tell me, Nelson Miller, his name is. He always used to tell me, don't forget who you are. And he used to call me Samurai. And he, you know, he still to this day calls me Samurai. And he said, don't forget who you are, because what you have, what I have is different. And the way I operate, it's just a way to win. He didn't care if I win 1-0 or 2-0 or 10-0. He doesn't care. But find who you are. And that was always one thing that he always said, is like, just don't lose that spirit. Don't lose who you are and stay connected. Yeah. So I don't feel like I ever left. So awesome. I was still training people in karate. I was still attending certain competitions to watch. I was still looking online, you know, at the Premier Leagues and the World Championships and Euros to see all the results. I never really left. You know, I kind of, you know, I love martial arts. I love it. I absolutely love it. I love karate. I could say it's my baby. That's my gem. That's like my first love. And, you know, I enjoyed Taekwondo. I enjoy Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I enjoy wrestling. I enjoy boxing. I enjoy all these different types. I enjoy judo. I love martial arts.
Awesome.
And I'm very open-minded to a lot of this, and actually it helps you develop your fight IQ. And I feel, 100%. And it's relatable. A lot of people ask me, karate or taekwondo? Karate or taekwondo? I always say karate, because that's my first love, and that's where I learned. And I say a lot of my friends, my close friends are from. But I've now got close friends in Taekwondo now, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And you know, it's, when people ask me karate or Taekwondo, or even when they're going to Taekwondo, what do you like more, Taekwondo or karate? You know, I was getting it from that side as well.
Mm.
It's like, that I've never, like, and I don't look at it that way. All I'm looking at is developing myself.
Yeah,
like, and that's it. I love just bettering myself, and I think that's what I've always done. I played football to the age of 14, and I still love watching football to this day. But then I played basketball from 18 to 20. But all them experience developed what I have now, and it goes hand in hand in my martial arts, and how quickly I can adapt to things, and My movement is different and the way I think is different because I do have that background. And, you know, Paul Newby, he done a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu and catch wrestling in our training when my time with him. And that gave me a whole new understanding in the clinch, you know, and that, you know, that's, I feel like that is martial arts. That is my club is called Kaizen, and the meaning of Kaizen is continuous development. Yeah. And I feel like that is all a part of it. You can't be closed-minded.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you feel that if you had to pick one thing, what did you learn from Taekwondo that you've brought over to your style of fighting in karate?
Yeah, it's funny because obviously I was testing that out in Paris, right?
Yeah, it seemed to work.
Yeah, I was testing that out in Paris, and it's just kind of it's added to my armor, I would say. There's certain things that I've put into my karate and my kind of the way I hold ground, the way I pressurize.
Yeah.
Now this new rule that's come in, Wakarete, and then, you know, the coaches then come in, the referees then start the fight again. The way I operate in that as well, because Taekwondo are already doing that. So it's quite similar. And so the way I operate in that kind of sense is it's changed my understanding on that. It's brought new kicks to my game as well, which I'm eager. And when I look at it as well, it's because obviously Taekwondo, what I believe actually is one of the martial arts that kind of, it's just like a spin-off of karate, you know, like when you go back and they go back, it was, you know, karate had, I don't know, we have Korean karate that is quite similar to Taekwondo, and you know, it has origin. I think Taekwondo has origins of karate in it, and it's funny because a lot of the kicks they have, we actually have in karate, but my understanding of kicking has just gone like that.
Amazing.
My godfather that passed away, Mervin Etienne.
Yeah.
We had always had conversations about kicking, because he's like the kick master. And one of the things that he used to say is he can't wait for me to return to karate to chop people's face off, right? it's funny because he always used to chat, and a lot of people who are close to Mervin will understand that he's big on kicking, or every time he saw Mervin, he's sitting in the splits. Don't matter where he was, he could be in the park, he could be on the train, so he could be on the train, he'll be sitting in the splits somewhere. But the way he used to speak about kicking, I've only understood what he was saying when I went to Taekwondo.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, before he passed, I remember ringing and it was like, I've just clocked what you're going on about. You know, nice. I understand what you're saying. It was good to like connect in what he's been, you know, nagging me about for all these years about what I need to do with my kicks, or even like what he was doing with me, but I didn't even know that I was doing it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, that kind of, you know, that connection.
Understand.
Taekwondo brought me that understanding of where my kicks need to be in karate.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. So after the bombshell of you telling me you've left GP Taekwondo, what's your focus or your sort of aim for your sports career moving forward this year?
Yeah, so this year, I can't really speak about what's going to happen this year, yet. Might have to do a part three, right?
Let's do it.
I have something cooking, which we can't say right now. But yeah, no, karate is definitely on my mind. And you know, it would have been nice to, you know, compete at the, you know, the Europeans that are coming up in Guadalajara in Spain.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to compete with the team there, but obviously it hasn't happened. But I have a few things up my sleeve with a great team, and you know, I'm one of them people. I don't sit still and I don't accept no for an answer. And I just keep going and get what I want. You know, I'm a believer. I have a lot of desire and dreams, and I just make things happen, and I just do what I need to make happen. And that's what I'm going to say on that, because now I feel like I'm going to spill the beans. So
that's all right. I think that's very, very apt with the quote I was going to bring up, which you said, what we do today affects tomorrow. And I think that's a simple statement, but it's hugely powerful. And for me, is something that you know, young people in particular could learn a huge amount from. Do you want to just expand on that sentiment?
Yeah. Like I say, I do, you know what? It's funny because I used that quote last week to one of my people that I do privates for. What you do today is what you do tomorrow. Now, it's, if you can make one change today, you can do one thing today that preps you for, you know, the next year, or you can cook something, or even like, you know, something big can happen. But you have to make the change today. You have to do something today to make that happen. And I always say, you can always think about something and you can always dream about something. But if you don't have a definite purpose and you don't put it into action, then it just will just stay a dream.
Yeah,
it will absolutely. Just, you know, it will just stay a dream. It will just stay in your thoughts, or you will get to that time where it should be all happening and you go, oh, I should have done that. You know, then that's where the regrets start happening and they creep. But, you know, you don't deserve it if you haven't put the work in, and you shouldn't be jealous of anybody about where they are today, because they've obviously made it. Even people who've won the lottery, for example, they had to put that lottery ticket in. You know, they had to put that lottery ticket in. They had to take action, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even taking care of your mental health. You know, if you're struggling, if you're if you have anxiety, if you feel like, you know, sometimes you don't know that you are depressed until you get diagnosed that you're depressed or somebody tells you. But how do you make action? And it's taking that first step, because there's always light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
There's always light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, sometimes the path seems impossible until it becomes possible. But you have to take that first step. And that's how you prep for tomorrow.
Nice. Nice. I feel like giving you a cheer and a clap for that. It's good. You got me pumped, man.
Awesome. But that's you know, that's how I live my life. If there's something that I want to do, then I will go and attack it. And sometimes it's hard because you don't always get the support that you want or need. But if that's what you really desire in capital letters, if that's what you really desire, then you will go and make that happen. And it's patience and it's the work that you put in for that, what will make it work. That's what will make it work. And you know, it's you can be told no, but it's what you do with that no, because you can be set back. You can even be set back, but it's how you respond. So there's, you know, you have to turn it into a positive. The fact that you're even dreaming, the fact that you're even speaking about it means that it can happen. So if you get told no, think about your response. Think about who told you no. Think about what you can do to make that happen. It doesn't matter who you can control who you have around you. You can control if that team is not going to help you and don't see your path or don't understand it. Okay, where do I need to go? What do I need to put in place? What people do I need to speak to? What people do I need to get to? Who do I need to get in touch with to make that happen? You know, there's a lot of ways to make your dream come true.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you in that. Thanks for sharing that with us. It's fantastic. Jordan, it has been such a pleasure to talk with you today. I could talk to you all day. I could speak to you
as well. I'm sorry it's taken so long.
I know, mate. But you've had it all going on this year.
It's been crazy.
We'll all be rooting for you whatever you do, and you know, I wish you every success for the year to come. I look forward to hearing about the next stage, one of many, I'm sure. And thanks again for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Pleasure.